This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
The following contains graphic depictions of body horror. You are listening to Tales from the Guild, Shadows of Paradigm. This is our post-season wrap-up episode. If you have missed any episode of the show, you can find them on freefm.org.nz or on your favourite podcast distributor. My name is Zebedee Swanson. I am the host and storyteller of Tales from the Guild, and I am joined by this season's cast.
Liz.
Joseph.
Scott.
If this is your first time joining us, Tales from the Guild is a show that tells stories using tabletop role-playing games to determine outcomes of actions that the cast members take. This season we use Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. Myself and all cast members are members of the Waikato Role-Playing Guild, and we could not have done the show without the help and interest of the team here at Free FM.
Yay!
Lovely ladies and gentlemen on the team here.
That they are. Thank you very much for giving us the space and asking us to do this for you.
Yes, and for trusting us not to somehow burn the building now.
Don't you guys have some questions to ask?
The nature of this postseason wrap-up is answering community questions that have been submitted through a post that we put out a few weeks ago.
We begged for them. We said, please.
And a couple of questions that we, the cast, have for Zeb, who tortured us all season.
And apparently each other.
Yeah.
Hey, well, true, actually.
I've got a couple of my own questions thrown in here as well, but we'll get to that. First question, what is the biggest challenge of record radio show /podcast?
Much like with normal D&D scheduling.
Yes, that was going to be my answer.
Yes, that's a very good answer, but I would like to get on Joe's side here and say editing. I've done my first year of editing my time. Whew, it is a lot.
What do you mean I can't just spam
If I never hear the word like, or various mouth noises ever again, shut up, Deb. It will not be too soon.
I restrained myself. I was about to, but I didn't.
Thank you.
Like, what are you talking about?
Don't leave that one out.
I have no such restraint.
But yes.
Scheduling and editing. And I would say finding people that you gel with, but we've been very lucky. I feel like we've gelled really well, and I don't think we've actually had a problem with any of that. But that's also another thing with D&D or TTRPGs in general, is you might bounce around for a while until you find a group of people that you really enjoy hanging out with and want to play with on that schedule, and then the schedule won't be that hard to keep up.
Yeah, because you actually want to... Oh, we're meeting at 6 p.m. on a Wednesday? Cool.
Yeah. So excited.
Yeah,
it's a highlight of my week.
A challenge for me, this is just a challenge when it comes to storytelling, writing, and running games in general, is the mid-season / mid-campaign hump where it's just like, do I want to keep doing this?
But then you get over that hump and it's just like,
oh, hey, the ending's inside. Yeah, no, this is fine.
And the ending's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, next question. How did you come up with Shadows of Paradigm?
I think that's a question for you.
So yeah, that's a question for me. Good question.
Well,
I don't remember.
Did you remember any of your inspirations for... Because that was going to be one of my questions, was what were your inspirations for, like, setting and stuff?
No.
Well,
so how it started is, at least the idea spawned from reading the Dungeons & Dragons UA document that talked about Dragon Marks that came out early 2025, and I was just like, I want to use these for a campaign. And then the call went out, it's just like, hey, anybody want to do a show for a Free FM? It's just like, I have an idea. Okay. And then from there it was just like turning why characters have these dragon marks into an idea, which was just like, well, they have the ability to basically see through a magical veil akin to the mist from Percy Jackson or a lot of other modern fantasy stories.
Yeah, it's a pretty common urban fantasy.
I didn't know there was... Well, to be fair, I'm not entirely familiar with Percy Jackson, so I didn't know they had... You cannot see the Greek/Roman shenanigans through mist.
Mm. It's not just Greek and Roman. There's also the Norse and the Egyptian.
He has expanded the law.
Oh, boy, okay. I have not been following the books.
Don't worry.
Anywho, we're not here to talk about that.
Yeah, and then from there, just kind of word vomited out onto a page until I had a setting.
Yeah, you went into a dark cave with your computer, and then you emerged 3.5 days later, covered in sweat, with a master document, going, I've done it! I've done it!
Yeah, not quite, but sure.
What? That's how I make all of my things.
No, quite honestly, for me, world building more or less just happens. It is not a process I can describe in any great fashion. Sometimes I can point to direct inspirations and how my thought process worked. This one, I could not tell you where it came from, other than what little I just did. So this is one for the three of you.
Oh, God. Yay! Why? No. Run.
What would each of your characters' favorite Christmas movie be?
Oh,
I believe this is a question from the guild members.
That is such a funny question. I know what Tanwin's would be immediately.
Magnus is probably Die Hard.
I called it. I knew it.
Specifically says it to people who don't class it as a Christmas movie.
I class it as a Christmas movie.
It's so funny.
It is a movie set in Christmas. I wouldn't necessarily call it a Christmas movie.
It's a Christmas movie. And it's set during, around Christmas. About a couple trying to reconcile. How is that not Christmas movie?
And there's a tree in it somewhere, I assume.
I haven't actually seen it, to be perfectly honest.
You should watch it, it's funny. Tanwin's favourite Christmas movie would be Elf.
Yeah, that tracks.
To be brutally honest, I'm reasonably sure Amadeus wouldn't have one.
He doesn't watch movies.
Well, no, he's...
he's been forced to watch movies for his job.
Look, the only reason he wouldn't see any movies is because Tanwin and Magnus would be dragging him to the movies. You're coming, Amadeus.
Get out of your office. You're not working today. We're going to go watch Elf. So which one would he prefer?
Oh, God. It would be...
Which one's shorter?
Wait, no. It's Krampus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just the, well, like, what are the
Grinch.
Few? Yeah, like,
the Grinch.
Oh, no, yeah, no, it's like, I wholly sympathise with the character in the beginning because he just wants to be left alone.
Honestly, yeah, the Grinch tracks so hard for Amadeus. Okay.
Either that, he would find a way to justify a Shakespeare movie as a Christmas movie somehow. Just to say that he likes Shakespeare movies.
Yeah.
Anyway, which moment from the campaign was your favourite?
Oh, it's kind of cliche to say it. I did really enjoy the very last episode when we disseminated all of what our characters have been doing and wrapped up their stories. But I really enjoyed... Sorry, Scott. But I know. But I really enjoyed bush bashing with Tanwin and Amadeus.
Enjoyed the episode where Magnus wasn't there.
Yeah, I know. That sucks. It would have been better if he was there. It was... Yeah, the episode where he was a giant cocoon.
Episode or two. I don't remember how many episodes.
I had a lot of fun because that's a really cool way to do a survival arc where you just spring it on people in the middle.
This is like, here you go. No more dragon. Walk to your base.
Yeah, because otherwise you can prepare for it. And surviving in D&D 5e isn't very hard if you know how to prepare for it. But I thought that was really clever how you just dropped us in it and made us survive when we were very used to essentially fast traveling around the country.
Yeah. I mean, my one is kind of not an episode, but more a moment. Ironically related to that, Amadeus is like, wait, what do you mean, Podavnik's got what? It's that moment of me realizing as Amadeus, he actually considers Podavnik to be his friend.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes characters surprise you.
Yeah, that's like, what do you mean he's taken the... He's a... What?
That was a really good...
Just that realization that Podavnik was his friend and that sense of abject betrayal of he was our friend. What? Yeah, that's mine, just...
It was very well done.
I think for Magnus, I've got to be pretty selfish and say it's the moment where he acknowledged the scarf and choked out the Ghoul King.
That was a really cool moment.
Yeah, no. I mean, mine was pretty selfish, to be fair.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So was mine. You weren't even there.
Not going to lie. For me, My favorite part was the part where I did no planning whatsoever, which was the arc where you guys were stuck in a storybook filled with plot holes where I let myself just come up with stuff on the fly because it didn't have to make sense because you're in a book full of plot holes.
Because it was a poorly written book.
Because it was a poorly written book that was stealing elements from other stories.
That was a really fun arc. I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah.
I loved how our, I think it started off as a morning tea and then it evolved into a grand ball,
yeah,
which is really good.
Yeah.
I full on did no planning deliberately to see if there would be any incongruencies and if you guys would notice any. And I think my own brain kept track of everything perfectly.
I only cared about cucumbers.
Yeah, and the fact that Vendors and Tamron were busy like, Amadeus is getting power hungry. We need to curb Amadeus before he starts thinking he's actually the seneschal or the chief minister or whatever the hell.
The vizier.
The vizier, that's
yes,
it.
Yes.
And it's like, just being like, no, I'm trying to get us through this book so we can get the heck out of here.
He's losing his mind.
I'm really not.
This is definitely a guild member submitted one.
Oh, boy.
So, why are you involved with the Waikato Roleplaying Guild, and why is it the best geeky thing in New Zealand?
Well, why am I involved?
Well, as a member.
Why am I involved? Well, I wrote the original constitution and helped found it. That's how I got involved.
That's awesome.
Yes.
No, it's fantastic.
My advice is never incorporate a society while you're trying to organize a convention. Because
that is a lot of work to do all at once.
Oh, yeah. And we had our first AGM in the one of the open areas at Chartwell Mall.
That's really funny.
Yeah, no, because you had to get somebody not signing the guild paper, the society paperwork, you know, vouch for all the signatures. So we got the Justice of the Peace to...
Oh, I thought you just went up to a stranger at the mall.
No. I don't know what the Justice of the Peace thought when 15 people came through and were like, hey, we need you to witness signing this document. And it's just like, all right.
Honestly, probably not the weirdest thing they've had to deal with.
No.
Probably not.
They deal with a lot of weird stuff.
And I've been a member ever since.
Yeah. Well, in terms of me, I have been consistently impressed by the management of the Waikato Roleplaying Guild.
Can they make it too obvious?
No. I'm not management, I swear. I've been impressed by the management of the Waikato Roleplaying Guild. It's a very, very well-managed society. Convergence, which is the yearly convention that the guild puts on, is always a lot of fun. And yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's a well-managed society and it is a pleasure to be a part of.
For me, I come from Wellington originally. Well, longer story than that, but recent history, I come from Wellington originally. Wellington doesn't really have anything like the Waikato Roleplaying Guild. Mm. You basically luck out into finding a chill group and otherwise you're just hoping that there's no creeps in the group of people that you're playing with. Maybe that's gotten better recently, but IDK. So it's been really cool to move up to the Waikato and take part in a guild that prioritizes the safety of participants.
Mm. Yeah.
And as someone who likes to run events, it's a really great way to get some of my more ambitious projects off the ground. Most recently with Amiga Game that we ran a couple weekends ago that had about 26 players.
Nice.
So yeah, shot guild.
Yeah. It's less about who you know and it's more about the guild helping you find people.
Yeah, which is weird considering it started out as a Facebook page.
Yeah.
To help people find games.
Yep.
I was there. I joined before I had a Discord.
Yeah, so did I.
Actually, may I have a Discord? I don't know. I joined late 2019, early 2020, trying to find players for a D&D game. Been a member ever since. Participated with all sorts of stuff. Helped in the background for one of the guild Christmas quizzes. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's
outside of a couple of university organizations, I think the guild's one of the only / role-playing related groups.
Outside of maybe LARP NZ.
Ah, NZ LARP.
Yeah, NZ LARP's. But they've been around forever.
So yeah, if you're wanting basically, if you're wanting a group of people to talk, not just tabletop role-playing games, but also board games and card games.
Absolutely.
Need to have more board game events.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're a board game person and you're like, man, I wish there was a place to do board games, hit us up. You know what I mean? Do it.
Especially if they're the more rule-heavy one. Oh. You've got a group of people who like rule systems.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, next question. How does playing a TTR TTRPG for a radio show slash podcast most differ from playing for fun with friends. And do you enjoy this challenge? I think I'll take this one.
Yeah.
We get to be a bit more...
Railroaders is a bad word in the circles, but...
More structured.
Yeah, more structured.
Yeah.
And there's a lot less stopping to smell the roses, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also get to re-say things and not just take them as they are first said.
Yeah. If you fumble something you say, you get to say it again and sound cooler.
And you get to torture your editor by...
It's better to take it clean. So yeah, you don't have to chop out a bunch of ums. It's fine.
For the most... I still have to chop out a bunch of ums. Shut up. Anyway.
For the most part, it was pretty similar. About the only thing different, at least for me, running it, I typically will set up battle maps and stuff. Mm-hmm. And since this is purely an audio experience, setting up physical battle maps and saying, oh yeah, we're going to move here and here and here, does not help.
Doesn't help.
And the fact that we don't have space to actually set out the battle maps.
No.
This is true.
We barely have enough space to put like character sheets and dice tables.
Yeah. Yeah, that is another challenge. The room itself is not small. It's just there's not a lot of table space.
Yes, because there's a lot of equipment involved in recording.
Yeah. Exactly. I feel like it's helped me get better at describing what my character is doing. Mm. Especially because I'm very aware that I am creating a mind palace for the people listening, and I don't want to just say, all right, so I'm going to go over here and then I'm going to hit this guy. All right, yeah, it's a 16. Yeah, I hit him. It's not great to listen to, and I know I still have a lot to work on, but it's been really helpful in becoming more descriptive of my storytelling, which... I really enjoy.
Yeah.
Anything to add, Scott?
I feel like it's not hugely different from normal playing theatre of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Tabletop RPG. Definitely there's a lot of thinking about what the listener's experiencing.
Yes.
And what sort of allowances should be made for their enjoyment, which we did think about, I can assure you.
Yeah.
We weren't just playing for our own entertainment.
No. I did not stress over the ending of this campaign whatsoever to make
great.
Sure.
It went great. You did a good job.
I did. I think. I hope.
You did. Stop doubting yourself.
Say something nice about yourself
come
now.
And beat the doubt out.
Until I hear from the audience whether or not it's good, I won't believe it.
We are the audience.
We are the audience.
You're the cast members.
We can be both.
Question.
Mutiny.
How long have you guys been playing together?
This
radio show.
About a year now. Yeah.
I knew Joe beforehand. And played with him maybe like 3 sessions.
Sure.
Yeah, I met Liz and Scott for this.
Yeah, the rest of it was winter and we turned up after dark in front of a strange building and we met a bunch of people for the first time.
Yeah.
Yep. And then we played games together.
Yeah.
And very quickly jumped off the rails.
Yes. Speaking of... Yeah, no, this campaign was going to be a fair bit darker. And then the first few episodes happened, and these 3 ended up just being goofballs, and I just ran with it.
Well, to be fair, I was envisioning quite a different character for Tanwyn. I had her as more warm and welcoming and calm, but these 2 egged me on. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
I think it was no such thing.
A toxic thing. The thing that I remember was... one of the first NPCs we came across had a bit of a sarcastic inflection. And I was like, nah, Magnus doesn't like that.
Nah, I get him.
Look.
Just caught built off there.
Look, yeah. I was told that this is going to be an investigative game. So I made...
You showed up.
I made a character for an investigative campaign. Then these 2 chuckle monkeys showed up. And
meat
I'm like,
heads.
Okay,
meat
I heads. Suppose this is what we're doing now.
Yeah.
Okay.
When I was doing the prep, I was just like, this is an investigative campaign. I was expecting a rogue, a bard, and, you know...
To be fair,
wizard or something.
Yeah.
Magnus was supposed to be more of an introspective barbarian.
Yeah.
I didn't want to rage at all.
First recording session, it's just like, this is Tanwyn's probationary in charge mission. Magnus is just like, egg on every bad idea that Tanwyn has.
Just being a good mentor.
Yeah.
And, well, Amadeus was just like, why did I get so
I was aiming more for like Dresden Files or Old Gods of Appalachia.
Yeah,
more
horror,
spooky stuff. And the first arc does reflect that a bit more. And then
they went downhill quickly.
Yeah.
The dice always pick the theme music, and the theme music has always been Benny Hill.
Yeah.
I am aiming to do a more grounded and mature thing for next season.
Good luck.
My advice is you might need to be a bit more hands-on on the character creation next time.
Yeah.
Not to say that our character creation wasn't bad. You know, we had three pretty good characters. It's just
That's it. This setting is also a lot more light than a lot of my other settings.
I don't think that's a bad thing, though. No. I think podcasts and radio shows in particular, I think they benefit a lot from lightness.
Levity.
Yes.
Season, when I was talking about it with the new cast members, gothic fantasy / gothic horror.
Mm. Well, we'll see.
Yeah. Okay, next question. Who was your favorite character that wasn't one you played?
Oh, God, don't make me choose. Well, I mean, if we're talking NPCs, I did really enjoy Amethyst. And I enjoyed ripping her and causing mischief for her.
That woman had the ability to grow hair, it would be great.
Yeah, and I thought she was great. I really enjoyed her. You did a really good job with her. All your NPCs were great, man. They really were.
I mean, I know I've... Padavnik. I love Padavnik.
Yeah.
He was best boy.
I don't know, the like Draco side partway through.
I mean, you've met Amadeus.
Amadeus is like, yeah!
What's a little Draco side between
friends? What's a little
friends?
Draco side between friends?
Oh, we didn't fight a dragon.
Not yet.
No.
We did not fight a dragon, nor did we go into a dungeon.
Actually, no, you did.
We did do a dungeon. Yeah, we did the dragon.
We always did the dragon.
There were dragons around.
There were a lot of dragons around.
We worked for a dragon.
Yeah. I will note on Pradavnik, off rip from the moment I started planning out this campaign, he was going to betray your asses.
That was a crazy twist. None of us expected that.
I mean, if you know, I believe the language that his name is... Macedonian or like it's one of the Slavic languages. His name is literally like betrayer. Which was a little Easter egg for anyone who understood.
You lampshaded it and we didn't see it.
I should have skipped my Macedonian classes. My favorite was probably King Keston.
Cool. Yeah, I liked him too.
It was not who I expected. I expected it to be ghost story times, not like a kind of depressed dude.
My best friend betrayed me and pushed me off a cliff.
Then brought me back to life and tortured me. Just a sad, sad man.
Yeah.
Hashtag just between friends.
No.
And it was always interesting, the amount of traumatized people we have to now wake in terms of info dumping on people like the most insane stuff.
I wonder how many of them would, things suddenly make more sense after the veil was torn.
Good. We breadcrumbed them. We helped.
The one that sticks out to mind in that regard is Captain LaCroix. Yes, we left him with so much. What the hell is this?
It's just like, you guys have to deal with this constantly. Stuff that I'm happy to be a peacekeeper.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, these people act like this is normal. What the hell?
Yeah.
He was a great character, too. Enjoyed him.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. The fact that basically every character has ended up intensely stressed out by you three was a little amusing. Anyway, next question. This is one from me. How many hit points was Henris on when the party fired the laser? That's nice and simple. He was on 29.
Shit, we nearly had him.
Yeah.
Damn.
Wow.
One more Magnus turn, he would go.
He lost a few hit points fighting 5 dragon queens.
Sure. Yeah,
as you know.
As one does.
Most of it was for Magnus, though.
It was for Magnus.
Oh, hell yeah.
Nice.
He dropped in at about 100 hit points.
Oh, geez. Wow. Good work, Magnus.
Did Tanwyn land a hit? I'm not referring to the history of hits there.
No, I got a couple in.
It was somewhere between like 80 and 100 hit points. Like, there was a full possibility that you kill Henris and then shoot the laser. But he also had a lot of shenanigans that he could do.
And our laser was looking pretty...
spicy.
Pretty wretched.
Yeah. Yeah, at the end there, I had 4 endings prepared. One where he destroyed the laser and you guys just lost from that. One, the laser didn't do anywhere near enough damage and Kavort just destroys the world because how dare you hurt him.
Oops.
One where you do sufficient damage and Kavort runs away because that's the first time he's been hurt. And the one you guys got where you just kill Kavort.
Yeah!
Yeah. Woo!
best ending.
No, no, it's the best ending. The,
it was arguably the best ending.
To be fair, the amount of kill stealing that Amadeus did throughout the entire
game. Yes.
To be fair, I kind of set you up on that on purpose because I knew that you had multiple bolts. So I would go around and take multiple people down further, and then I would rely on you to finish them.
Okay. Next question is, how do you get started if you're not great at meeting people and maybe overthinking your own abilities? We actually have a good thing for that in the Waikato Roleplaying Guild. It is a little program called Regular Play.
That's true.
Along with the Intro 2 series of activities that we have going.
Occasionally they'll do the No Girls Allowed, No Boys Allowed.
Mm. I don't think I've ever seen No Girls Allowed.
I don't
allowed.
Know if No Girls Allowed is a thing.
There's definitely been a couple of No
that's
Boys
just
Allowed.
Just normal D&D.
You say that, but we have Girl.
Woo! I'm here!
Honestly, I think about half of the guild members are women.
Yeah, it's great. Great.
At least half the committee is...
All the committee is women.
Yeah.
The entire guild council is women.
The future is female.
Ladies are in charge.
Yeah!
Join the Waikato Roleplaying Guild's Facebook page and or its Discord.
Mm-hmm.
Then keep an eye out for posts about activities such as Regular Play, which is happens four times a year, which is a cycle of basically 6-week games that people run. We've had everything from the regular Dungeons and Dragons game that pops up every single time it happens to the more niche and unknown RPGs out there.
Yeah.
I think, except for Dungeons and Dragons, I was unfamiliar with basically every system that was on offer this cycle.
It's fun. If you're looking to play something, you're not sure what to play, turn up and see what...
Give it a hone.
Give it a hone, see what seems interesting to you.
There's also Convergence.
That's
Convergence,
that's
if you
true.
Want to try games.
Great place to start.
There's stuff like the Mega Game that Scott was talking about, if you want to just
meet some people.
The guild tries to do something funky once a month.
There's the series where they go out to like Raglan and...
Yeah,
all of the Dice and Districts.
Yeah, Dyson districts.
That's the one.
Where they go to various like towns and stuff around the Waikato just to show that it's...
Not just Hamilton.
Exactly. And
but you really just have to get into it. You know, I answered a Facebook message before the Discord. I answered a Facebook message. I showed up at a stranger's house and I met a bunch of people and they're now some of my very, very best friends in the whole wide world. And I've been playing for years and years and years now. And you just have to be brave. You just have to jump in.
I mean,
don't worry about being weird. We're all weird.
As for overthinking your own abilities, everybody starts somewhere. Also, I have played with some bland people, and it's fine.
It's fine.
You don't have to do character voices or be amazing at this.
Role-playing is a skill.
Not only is role-playing a skill, we are not professionals. We are not Critical Role. We are not Dimension 20.
No,
we're better.
We're better because we're just a bunch of buddies having fun.
You say that as if they aren't. But yeah.
Just show up.
You learn by learning, and sometimes learning is by doing.
Yep. Also,
if you're unsure, ask for people who are willing to accept people who are brand new to the game.
Oh, yes.
Like, admittedly, some people aren't because the games that they are running are not new player friendly.
Ignore Zeb. You should definitely play in that Shadowrun 4th edition game.
Don't get into it.
You'll be fine.
Don't, unless you want to have a brain aneurysm.
Oh man, Shadowrun. I've played that before. It's hard.
Yeah, like
just
if
come
you...
with 8 spreadsheets, you'll be fine.
Oh, and when you show up to a game, bring snacks.
Yeah.
Bring snacks for everyone.
Everybody,
they love you.
Just double check allergies first.
Oh, yes.
Next question. If there was something you could have done differently, what would it have been? I will let you guys answer this first as players.
Sure.
And then I will answer.
Sure. Well, me personally, like I said before, I've been getting better at descriptions, but I kept a notebook and I did have to write down in my notebook so I could see it, describe what you're doing. So I would have wanted to be better at that from the very start, because I know there's a few parts in the podcast that I'm less than proud of when I just say I go here and I do this and I hit him, and it would have been a lot better with a lot more descriptors, but you know, we live and we learn, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm
not take on the role of editing.
Yeah, not take on the let somebody else do the editing.
Nobody here knows how to do that.
I do.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Yeah. Well, I do as well, but I will never admit it.
You just did.
It sucks.
It does.
I recorded a 5-episode podcast once. This was like a year ago. 2 of the episodes are still unedited.
Yeah, that's the way. Also, something I would like to work on is speak in a way that requires as little editing as possible.
It's fine.
Like, what are you talking about?
Shut up.
Cut all of that out.
Look, it's fine. I don't... As much as I groan, most of it's in jest, just I wouldn't have volunteered for the editing. But I didn't mind doing it. I don't mind doing it. But I will enjoy having a lot of free time back.
Yay!
Yes, we are very grateful that you did that.
We very much are.
Yes.
What about you, Scott?
2,000%. My main thing that I would have said was exactly what Liz said, just being more deliberate and expressive with the description. It can get a bit difficult, especially the interaction between the player and the DM. It's like where the DM wants to describe the world and you want to describe your action on it. So finding the line where you can both get the maximum description in.
Yes.
Could have worked, and we got there.
Yeah,
but
we definitely got at it as it moved on.
Yeah. That being said, the second thing I would have done differently is I would have chosen a funky accent and stuck to it the whole time.
Yeah,
because it seemed like a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. I love talking in accents. I can only really do one.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing is like you don't want to do an offensive accent.
Yeah. You can always do French,
which is offensive in its. Like French.
Yeah, that's true.
Apologies to any French listeners.
No, they love us.
I'm sure your cheese is very stinky.
For me, a lot of descriptions, like I noticed myself, like the longer combats went on, I ended up losing descriptions more and more and try to bring that back in. Just so much going on, that I need to keep track of that sometimes I just lose the plot on things. And remembering which voice I did for which NPC. Because I'm sure there's a few of them that it's just like...
Just bounces around.
Yeah. By the end of it, I had figured out what Amethyst's voice was. But I think hers shifted over the course of things. At Pradavnik's, I probably would have did a different voice for Pradavnik off-rip, because that was probably not a great voice for radio.
It was... No, I loved it. It's very unique. So good.
That poor boy.
Poor unfortunate boy.
Okay, next one. You use D&D 5e for this season. Is there a TTRPG system you would like to use for a future season?
Oh, can I answer this?
Yeah.
If I was going to be the DM, I would love to use Monster of the Week. Mm. It's a New Zealand system. It was made in New Zealand.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I know, right? And it is a lot of fun. It's super easy to write really quick one-shots, and it's really modular, and you can really make it your own. I've run Monster of the Week before, and I always really enjoy it. But the way that I run it, I usually have a lot of physical items, so yeah. I would have to work out how to make it work in the theater of the mind, because I usually pass out. Here's some Instagram posts that you've been seeing online.
Yeah,
the
similar issue with if you were to do something like Delta Green.
Yeah, I know, because my answer was going to be Call of Cthulhu.
Call of Cthulhu would probably work pretty well for this.
The problem is there is a well-known campaign called Masks of Nyarlathotep, which would probably be the campaign that I would run.
Oh, cool.
But the problem is, much like what you were talking about, is there's a stack of handouts that comes with it. And so it'd have to be a case of, cool, and if the listeners want to see the handouts, look on Instagram or Facebook or XYZ, and this is the handout. Call Cthulhu or World of Darkness, you know, Vampire the Masquerade, Werewolf the Forsaken, one of those games would be...
That would be really cool as
well. I thought it was Werewolf the Apocalypse.
They've got so much stuff going on there, man.
You can put any sort of a mythical creature adjective next to each other, it's been done.
Yeah,
so my answer is either Call Cthulhu or World of Darkness.
Yeah.
I would probably lean towards something powered by the apocalypse. If I were to run something with moves in a more descriptive way of play. Personally, when I'm like listening to podcasts, if the combat goes on too long, it can get a little bit
samey.
Yeah, I did try to make interesting.
Ours was great.
Ours was real fast.
Yeah, and I could tell, like, one of the things you did quite well, Zeb, like adapting 5e to a podcast form, was you had those lag in a fight where it's okay and now we're moving on to the next stage, and the fight with the Ghoul King where it's like okay now there's a tornado of ghouls coming out and they're flying out all over the place.
And you hit really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. We either killed them or we died.
Yeah, you didn't do any chip damage. You hit really hard.
It wasn't one of those ones where it's sort of like, I'm sure we've all had this at a 5e table where, well, I mean,
Pathfinder.
Yeah. Where it's just like, okay, well, this is a very long strategic fight where we're like playing to our advantages. The kobolds are popping out, shooting off a crossbow bolt, and then they're hiding behind the wall again.
It was real glass cannon stuff. And even though they hit hard, you made us feel pretty powerful.
Oh, I got a good in.
So,
I mean, basically every fight was just you versus more or less one opponent.
Yeah.
Because
we basically did a boss rush.
Yeah. For something like this without battle maps, it is so much easier. Just players versus one guy. And I was just like, I need to make the one guy interesting, so mechanics and stuff.
And, you know, you had your layer actions and your weather actions.
Yeah,
and your,
definitely.
I mean, I think the only combat where we had more than one opponent was the last one, where we had all the
harpies
coming along.
They were like those early ones with the flying eyes. I hated those.
Oh, those were so scary.
Yeah. I didn't have any ranged weapons, so I was just kind of like...
You were a real bastard about that one.
Because I think it was...
You were the only ranged character.
Because I had Eldritch Blast.
Yes,
come closer so I can hit you with my sword. So it's something like a Blades in the Dark or...
Yeah, honestly, Blades in the Dark would work so well for this. For me, I have two that I would like to do at some point. Starfinder.
Right.
Which version?
1E, because that's the one I have all the books for.
Fair enough.
And I haven't really gone over the second edition material.
Fair enough.
And then I believe it's Swedish, a system called Simbarim.
I've never heard of it.
It's a dark fantasy D20 system that just has the most gorgeous art going. The art for it was what made me buy the books for it. And then I read the books for it and went, hey, this is a really cool system.
Oh, that's awesome.
It has been on my to-run list for ages. I have not gotten around to it because I have so much other stuff going on.
Regular play.
Yeah. Regular play.
It's been on my list of stuff to do. But I keep myself capped out at 2 games at a time because elsewise it is too much game load for me.
Yeah, that's fair.
I can play more games. I'm only going to run 2 games. I've tried running more games. Too much for me.
It's a lot.
The other one would be when the current Neon Odyssey Kickstarter for 5.5e gets released, running that setting. Maybe not that exact setting, but basically using that rule set because it is sci-fi 5e.
Fun.
Sounds like a blast. Anyway, what do we got next on the shopping list?
Next on the shopping list, it's your guy's turn.
It's our turn.
We'll start with Scott. Move our way around.
So this is more of a personal question. As you might have picked up from one of my earlier things where I talked about board games, I am mildly obsessed with board games. So I want to know what all of your favorite board games are.
Ooh.
I was just talking about this with my wife, Mousetrap.
Yeah!
The one with the physical little...
Yes!
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no. Yeah!
My nephews and niece agree with you.
I don't like the super complicated board games, which is weird.
Because you like super complicated games.
Yeah. Or rather, I haven't found one that I have gelled with. About the most complicated one that I enjoy is Betrayal at House on the Hill.
Mm.
I love that one. That one's... But, you know, you need a lot of people to make it good.
Mm.
You need, like, 5 or 6 people for it to be truly enjoyable.
Have you done Betrayal at Baldur's Gate?
No, I have seen it, though.
Mm.
But I imagine it's basically just D&D's version of House on the Hill.
It's House on the Hill, but D&D version.
Yeah, so the same thing applies. You need, like, 5 or 6 players for it to be super good.
I wouldn't know. I played it years ago. I've moved beyond such games.
The other two I really like are Scrabble and Monopoly. I'm real basic when it comes to board games.
How about you, Jeff?
Well, I don't...
I'm currently trying to find the name of one of them that... Well, I'm like, you first!
I mean, in terms of, like, board games, Arkham Horror is a fun one that I've enjoyed, but... And I've never been rich, so buying board games is... Monopoly's fun, I bet, you know, everybody's played that. But in terms of sitting around and playing games, there's a code game called... Flux.
Oh, yes.
Where the
rules change.
Basically, the base rule is you draw a card, you play a card.
Mm.
And then the cards you play change the rules.
Fun.
I both love and hate that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that in terms of non-tabletop games, that is my favorite.
I mean, it's still a tabletop game. You mean non-role-playing games.
Non-role-playing games.
Yeah. Strong clarification there.
And Cards Against Humanity is always a good time.
If you have the right group of people.
If you have the right group of people with the right sense of humor.
And the right night.
And the right night. And maybe a little alcohol.
Yeah. The correct amount of reaction.
I like playing the family version of Cards Against Humanity. Mm-hmm.
hey, man, oh, sure. If that floats your boat, then that floats your boat.
Honestly, because the jokes are funny.
Sometimes the jokes in Cards Against Humanity can be a little bit like, okay.
So Flux and Cards Against Humanity are my preference if I have to choose.
So I have two at the moment. One of them is my all-time favourite board game from my childhood that I used to make my family play all the time. It's called Scotland Yard.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That is also, that would be on my top five.
If it was released today, it would be so super popular. It's an asymmetrical game. Mm-hmm. There's one group of people who work together. There's one person who works on their own, and it's everybody against one. And you can do it super quick. It's really easy to switch out the roles. And I always played the robber because I was my family's special baby, and I got to play the robber all the time. But Scotland Yard's really fun. Yeah, I enjoy it.
I need to play that again with my wife. We have that.
Yeah! Oh, hell it's yeah. Great. I've still got my mum's still got it at her house.
Can't say I've ever heard of it before.
It's great.
It's so much fun.
I'd bring it to a board game night if it wasn't literally almost 30 years old and falling apart.
Yeah.
There are modern versions of it.
That's true.
We bought a brand new copy of it 2 years ago.
Oh, cool. My other favourite game, I actually just learned about it recently, just played it with my normal group, was called Everdell.
Oh, yeah, classic.
So that was really fun. Yeah. I really enjoyed that. I wasn't expecting...
It's like a little city builder, yeah. But it's all cute animals.
Yeah, it was really cute. And the animal that you choose gives you certain advantages, and you don't really know how anybody's doing until right at the end where you count it all up, so you never feel like you're losing miserably like you do in some games.
Yeah, it's usually pretty close.
Yeah, I enjoyed that a lot. I had a lot of fun with that.
I mean, it's not one of my favourite games, but Settlers of Catan
has
a special place in my heart because I've run the Kingmaker campaign for a tabletop group, and I got people for it ironically through the Guild Facebook page.
The fact that Kingmaker, out of all the adventure paths, is the most popular one blows my mind a little
people
bit.
People want to build a little town.
Thing is, part of it, as the name suggests, you make a kingdom. My group, in their infinite wisdom, decided to call their kingdom Catan. Simply so that they could make the joke that they were the settlers of Catan.
There you go. How beautiful. About you, Scott? What's your favourite?
Oh, don't ask me to pick a favourite among my children.
Your sweet baby.
I will instead talk about the kind of games that I like.
Okay.
I really enjoy games that tell a story through their mechanics. Mm. Unfortunately, this usually means that they're heinously complicated.
You're like the person that plays Conquest of Africa or whatever it is.
The War for North Africa.
Yeah.
I wish I had a copy of that.
You are one of the nerdiest game people I know.
Like, you considering the type of mega games you run, I was just like, yeah, that would be the type of game that's up his alley.
You have no idea. I have several copies of all varieties of the same game. It's called 18XX Games, and it's not what you're thinking when you first hear that. It's is for years.
Yeah, it's like the 4X games.
1836 or 1846. And they're games about investing in railroad companies. And then operating those railroad companies.
Yeah, but fuck yeah.
So you can have games that require spreadsheets.
Mixed holding in them. It dumps sometimes actually require a spreadsheet for the final turn. But you can dump stock and force unprofitable companies onto others. The stories those ones tell are pretty great.
Like if Monopoly, if you were serious about it.
Probably top.
It's Monopoly for serious capital. Serious capitalists.
Yeah, it's Monopoly if it wasn't a protest against monopolies.
Yeah. Oh, favorite probably Spirit Island. Overall,
I've heard of that one.
Like a response to Catan.
Mm.
Essentially, you play the spirits on an island. Crazy, who would have thought? And there's these strange people coming from overseas. And wow, they breed really quickly. And a lot of them are coming in from overseas. Yeah. And the native inhabitants are getting overwhelmed.
It's just like, stop doing that.
Stop it.
And
stop it.
So, yeah, you have to either scare, encourage, or kill them.
That sounds like a bit of fun.
It is great fun because it's got this really nicely balanced power curve where at the start you're like, this is fucking hopeless. I can kill one little explorer and there's a city popping up every turn, and then by the end of the game you're causing volcanic eruptions to just wipe half the board.
Cool. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's great fun.
Do you have any other questions on your list?
That was the only one I had.
Okay, Joe.
Ironically, the one major one I had was already on the list was, what was your inspirations for what were your expectations coming into this game, and how did they change through gameplay? I mean, I know you've already answered it to a certain degree.
Initially, I mean, it still was. It was definitely an Eldritch story that used Eldritch monsters. It was going to be a lot more horror-centric.
Mm.
Yeah, not good. At the time I was creating everything for this, I was listening to Old Gods of Appalachia a lot.
You did say that that was a major influence at the start of the campaign when you pitched it to us.
Yeah. Which is really...
It's a great podcast.
Horror podcast. And then we got through the first arc and I just kind of gave up. It's just like, no, these are not the main characters of a horror series.
More like a buddy cop comedy.
Yeah. So like still kept a lot of the...
The horror elements were still definitely...
I still tried to make the monsters and everything you guys came across horrible.
They were.
But yeah, as I also said earlier, the setting is a lot lighter than probably what should have been for a horror setting.
Mm.
But that's fine. Basically, over the course of things, I lent into both the awfulness of the situation you guys were in and just let goofy things happen.
Yeah, you know, sometimes awful things happen and your response is being a bit goofy. I think that's an accurate way.
You get stuck in a storybook and learn about lion sharks and a guy can't remember what his title was, something rather sinister.
Count Sinister. Yeah.
He's our favourite person.
I love him. Loved Count Sinister. What about you guys?
What are your...
Yeah, I mean, I try not to enter campaigns with expectations. As you've seen, my dice rolls are famously bad. And if I enter with, I'm going to be this badass, I'm going to win the day, I'm going to, you know, do everything right, it can be quite upsetting.
I think you should probably play a few more spellcasters that require other people to roll for you.
Yeah. I do normally do that, is the thing. I've got a lot of characters like that. But
Halfling divination wizard.
Yeah. If you approach your gameplay without those kind of expectations, it's a lot more fulfilling, I feel.
Mm. Otherwise, it's just like, my expectations haven't been met.
Yeah, I don't want to upset myself by setting myself up to be this certain way or the certain character and then feeling bad that I didn't do it. So I guess that's a good piece of advice for people who are looking to get into RPGs as well, is you can't come into it with a certain way that you want to play. Your dice denote what you do. It's the way that you react to them is how you have fun.
Mm.
The dice have an equal part in the storytelling process.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
As you say, you know, I run over there and I try to punch this guy in the face, and then you roll a natural one, and then I trip and fall when I face one.
Yeah.
Or you punch him wrong and you break your wrist.
Yeah.
What about you, Scott?
Expectations.
Yeah.
Expectations versus how they evolved over, you know.
Yeah. When I went in, I had this really strong idea that Magnus was never going to rage. I wanted to have the Garf and all the ghosts be a secret that got revealed later on. But then as it became clear how deadly everything was, it's like, oh, that's not really going to work.
That's what you came to me with. And I was just like, yeah, I'm going to push this man to rage. And like, that first arc was just like, I'm going to put you in situations where raging is necessary.
Yeah.
Because you're playing a reluctant rager. Okay, that means the story needs to demand you to rage.
Mm, it's a good way to increase that dialogue between DM and player as well.
Yeah.
Kind of that kind of
Any other questions?
Yeah, I've actually got a question for each of you. So the first one, it does kind of tie into what we were just talking about, Scott. You had a character who had quite a clear character arc, and especially compared to Tanwyn and Amadeus to a lesser extent, Magnus evolved over time. How did you feel balancing that with the arc of the campaign where you didn't necessarily know where it was going to end?
I just went with the flow. There was no preemption to it. I just trusted Zeb to make his moment when he did. When we were going to Ishagar, I was like, okay, there's probably going to be something Magnus related popping along.
Yes.
But yeah, before then it was just holding pattern. That's part of why I didn't lean too much into, I guess, being super depressed about the scarf or anything like that, because I didn't want to lay it on too heavy if that plot thread wasn't coming in.
Sure.
So yeah, we kept the mentions of the ghosts coming on. I think I referenced it every now and then.
Yeah, absolutely.
And especially during combat when you're using some of the abilities, like a ghost will pop in,
ghost
and
pops in
and will defend Amadeus when you're using various like abilities and stuff, which was actually kind of cool. It's like, that's very thematic, and I'm like, I love that.
Yeah.
On that note, I do want to apologize to Liz.
Why?
Well, we kind of interacted with both Magnus's and Amadeus's backstory and their backstory locations, and we went nowhere near Liz's stuff.
Oh, gosh, I didn't care.
Tanwyn's arc was not failing at being the leader of a mission.
Yeah, I was the first arc. You forget that.
True.
It was her first time trying to be a leader. She didn't do a very good job, but she learned a lot. I was very happy with where Tanwyn went. I didn't feel like she needed to revisit old scars or change. You know, obviously, she matured through the campaign. She started off really erratic and got significantly less erratic as the campaign went on.
I mean, she did have that big character moment where she's just like, you guys are a bunch of idiots. What do you mean you're considering letting the ghouls take it?
Yeah. She did manage to step up as a leader in the end, so I was very happy with her one. And it was kind of less... focus, but that's absolutely fine by me.
And then the brief moment at the end where she lost all of her paladin powers.
Yeah. And then I rolled a nat 20 to heal Amethyst. It was the last roll, and that was a legitimate roll. I wasn't lying about it. I was so happy. That was such an awesome roll.
Nice.
So, Joe, my question for you is, this was, I believe, the first time playing D&D, or the first time in quite a while. Fifth edition.
Well, I've played... This is the first time I've played, like, a long-term 5e, like, campaign beginning to end. I played a little bit here and there. And
yeah, but you came over from Pathfinder. How did you find the difference? And is it... I'm saying this because a lot of people either choose D&D or they choose Pathfinder and they don't really switch between them. But should people switch over more? Should people try both?
I mean, while I prefer Pathfinder, it's been a lot of fun. While I've butted heads against some of the differences, I've enjoyed it. I can see why people enjoy running and playing D&D. It's a very easy system to comprehend.
Yeah.
It is. And to learn.
I will say, as the person, it is fine running it until you hit combat, because it is a nightmare to balance.
The balancing, it's always had balancing issues. Yeah.
That's why I love running Starfinder so much.
Oh, cool.
The interesting thing for me is, coming from Pathfinder, where you have a million options for character and to do things out of combat.
Sure.
To D&D, where it's almost entirely geared to do combat.
Right, yeah.
We're looking at the non-combat related systems, which are very light.
That is definitely one of 5e's flaws.
That's a feature the D&D is. It's built for combat.
Yeah, I mean, it started off as a survival horror dungeon explorer.
Definitely.
You know, it's just like, okay. Like I say, it does combat well. I wouldn't call the CO ratings in D&D...
No.
Helpful.
Good or helpful.
No.
But, look, it's been a lot of fun.
It's functional. It does a lot of fun character creation.
Yeah.
And like I say, I can see why a lot of people like it. And it's incredibly easy to learn and pick up. Especially,
I mean, coming off the back of Pathfinder, I would imagine D&D a lot easier to pick up, to be honest.
Oh, yes.
Pathfinder 1e is... There's so much.
So much. But if you're a D&D player and you really want to sink your teeth into some extra stuff, hey, give Pathfinder a go.
Yeah.
It's got the juice.
Oh, yeah. If you're coming from 5e, I would recommend 2nd edition Pathfinder.
Oh, yeah.
But that's just me. Mm. And... because 1st edition has...
You think the balancing issues of 5e are bad. Pathfinder is much better 3.5, and 3.5 has horrendous balancing issues.
Oh, yeah. I think if you're doing Pathfinder 1st edition, you just need to make sure everyone's on the same level of comprehension of the system.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because even someone who is not a power gamer playing Pathfinder 1e with a bunch of people who are new to the system is going to look like the most power gamer of power gamers.
But if you like power gaming, hey, give it a go. And my question to you, Zeb, is going to give you a softball for the last question. It's an easy one. What was your favourite part of the world building that you did for this campaign? What's the part that you made and you were like, yeah!
I think my favourite bit of world building that I did for that was when I was making the map for the setting, I was just like, I'm going to name a bunch of places after one guy.
I love Caston's Rise, Caston's Fall.
Yes, Caston's Rise, Caston's Forest, Caston's Fall. It's just like,
so
there's
good.
A story here. What's the story? Guy came to power, started naming stuff after himself, died.
And it was a great story arc.
Other than that, places like, I really liked coming up with the places, because you had things like Pavice, which is a town that briefly got mentioned, which is this fortress city that's up in the north that, before Seagate was a thing, defended the territory up north from the south.
Sure.
Basically, it just fully blocked off that area of land.
Cool.
Seagate. There was another cool one with, as its name said, it is basically this giant town that built at a gate that leads to
an important trading port. I really enjoyed the way that you justified the existence of all of the towns. Like, the central town had a lot of farms, so it was able to export a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
We were up in the mountains. We were easily defendable.
Yeah.
You know?
Grand Dharma, which was based between, hold up, let me check my map. I know it was next to the False Sea,
yes.
Which was, when I named it, it's just like, this is a salt lake. Hence its name.
Hence its name.
I believe it's near either the Red Woods or the Red Forest or something like that. The Crimson Forest. Yeah. And then Ardafora's Claw, which was this mountain range. There was a lot of different places that didn't get seen. The Warscar Canyon was barely mentioned, and that's right next to the Memoria Sanctorum, and is the sole reason that the Memoria Sanctorum exists.
I think you gave us a brief description when we went to visit the Memoria Sanctorum.
Basically, there was a war. Caretaker of the Memoria Sanctorum cast a spell, created this great whopping canyon, killed so many people, had his magic bound, and was told to take care of this place.
Yes, and we're going to deposit all our important stuff here, because there's this guy that we're tasked with defending this place. We might as well get some use out of him putting all our important stuff here.
Basically. And then there was Eloduana, which was the capital city named after Mana Dawn in the old language, and you guys never went there. And then there's just this tiny little island off the west coast of Paradon called Lonland. As in lonely land. I like world building and making the maps and coming up with place names, because most of the place names for places, even in the real world, are dumb.
Yeah, funny that they're dumb. Are you going to use this map in any other games that you run?
No.
It's just for us. Oh, I feel so special.
Because, yeah, in real life, there's multiple river Avalons in England.
Avon.
Because it's the Celtic word for river.
Then there's a hill that's called Hill.
Yes. And then there's Mount Maunganui, which is Mount Sacred Mountain.
I just had fun building the map and doing the world building. For this campaign, I did very little world building, to be perfectly honest, because I had not a lot of time between going, oh yeah, I'll do it, and we should probably start doing this. I had like a month. Next campaign, a lot more world building.
Sure.
Like, in just doing the heritages, there's already more world building in...
It's heritages and like...
Races.
Races, yeah.
Yes. I hope everybody's going to get excited for this one, because you're putting in a lot of work and I'm excited to hear it. So.
I'm actually going to go in and be able to listen to it.
Yeah!
The campaign that I was working on doing before I found out that I was going to be running next season, I've been working on since October, November last year.
Cool.
Normally, I do a fair amount of world building for the campaigns I run. This was one where it's just like, which is why it's just like, I don't really have explanations for where things came from, because I don't have inspirations for them, other than just like the starting idea that spawned everything.
I feel like you managed to get the important part.
It certainly seemed like there was plenty of history for the places we did visit.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, a fair amount of lore I was coming up with throughout.
Don't tell people that.
That's fine.
He did a lot of work.
The trolls and stuff, that was something I came up with when you guys went to Caston's Fall.
Oh, I like those.
Yeah.
That was
fun. That was interesting.
I really like the rock flood. I thought that was a really fun way of moving an era on.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Yeah. Will I ever explain that? No, because I don't need to. And no more questions?
No more questions for me.
Well, then that will be us.
Wow.
Unfortunately, that is all the time that we have. Thank you all for listening. It is time to say goodbye to Joseph, Scott, and Liz. But you can join me back here in September with a brand new cast of heroes for the next season of Tales from the Guild, which will be called Tales from the Guild: Escape from Orteria.
Well,
this is Zebedee Swanson, host, storyteller, waiting to tell you another story when next we meet.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.